Yes, good morning, dear listeners. Good morning, dear listeners. Very beautiful Monday morning. Welcome to Early Morning Scoop with David Shombe. And I think it's the right time to thank Mattia Sangala. And yeah, as it has always been the case, Early Morning Scoop is a platform where we discuss, economic matters. It's a platform where we give you through the morning takes how things are doing at an economic front. And this is also a platform where we do economic analysis. It's a platform where we analyze policies, domestic and also international relations, and everything that is attached to bread and butter. And with Early Morning Scoop, like wherever you are, it's always very important whether you are jogging, you are still in bed, or you are about to be awake. Some are already driving to work. And I think you did the right choice to listen to this, your favorite radio station, Eagle FM, and also to this program, Early Morning Scoop. Today with me, David Shombe. I'm going to be with you until the hour of 7:30. And, it's always a pleasure to be here. And with Economic Matters, it's also the time where we do critical analysis at institutions. We analyze institutions, whether it's government agencies, whether universities, whether non-governmental organizations, and all the actors in economic development of Namibia, because the only aim is to make sure that as long as Namibia is not yet at the standard where it was or it has to be, we have to continue contributing, and also we have to continue with this deep discussion and analysis so that we can be able to get what are the challenges, what are the opportunities, and how can we advance our state. And like we are always doing, we also open the platform after deep conversation, after critical analysis of a certain policy. We also open conversation for those listeners who can engage us, because we believe in constructive criticism, and we also make sure that individuals are given an opportunity to exercise their democratic right and also express their view. And it's also with this good understanding to say, for us to build institutions, for us to build, agencies, for us to build states and also international organizations, we don't necessarily need to agree on one thing. That's why it's always very important to make sure that after something is being presented, it's always very imperative to make sure that you contribute. We are going to open the line so that you'll be able to contribute to the conversation. Yes, to my dear listeners, before we go to what we have today on the table, it's always very important to remind you to say, it's always very important to continue connecting with us so that you will not miss your economic news, you will not also miss your policy analysis, you will not miss developmental discussions, and also developmental statistics, because we understand that for you to make a long-term economic strategic decision, so it's very important that you have right, correct, on time information. And you can only do that by subscribing or by making sure that you follow us in our social media platform. Follow Eagle FM on Facebook, follow us on X, follow us on LinkedIn, and also follow us on Instagram. Like our page and also share our page so that those who follow you will also be able to follow us. We also have our e-paper, that is of course the Villager newspaper, which is coming out every Monday, Wednesday and Friday to update you on economic issues, developmental issues, issues of energy, issues of agriculture, issues of opportunities, mining, and all sectors which are part of bread and butter issue. Apart from the Villager newspaper, there are also those who are still failing to connect with us, and those who are always asking, a lot of relevant questions to say, Eagle FM, where are you? Why are we not connecting with you? And the frequency is not reaching you. We hear you, but we have a solution for you. That is by making sure that download our app, go to Play Store, download Eagle FM app so that you'll be able to listen wherever you are. The operational mechanism of Eagle FM app is the same as WhatsApp. But what is very interesting about this is that you listen to the programs which are on air, and you also be able to go to the podcast so that you can listen to the previous programs, previous shows, and you update yourself. Other one, before we go to what we have on the table, is Imba App. Imba App is a simplification and a smart way of accessing your hymn book. That is, of course, your Ehangano, Noshuambo. We also have a hymn book in English, Ocherero, Maimburiro, Afrikaans, Silozi, and many other local Namibian languages. What is very interesting about this hymn book, wherever you find yourself, whether you are a pastor, whether you are attending graduation events, whether you are attending, it can be happy events, can also be unfortunate, but indeed life events like, you know, memorial services, funerals, and yeah, where you are required to sing, and you do not have a hard copy hymn book, we made life easy for you. Just download Imba App. When you download Imba App, you'll be able to access your hymn book in the language that you can understand, and you can be able to sing along. Yes, dear Gale FM listeners, you are listening to Every Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe, and we are here until the hour of 7:30. And yeah, stay tuned after a very short commercial break, then we can continue with our program. We can also going to indicate to you what we have for you today, and yeah.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3-month subscription, 10% discount for 6-month subscription, and 25% discount for 12-month subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Lipura nengeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite okoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna e mitota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko derewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM. The Eye.
Yes, welcome to Every Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And as we are always presenting economic news with you, as we always do policy analysis at this platform, it's also a platform where we do institutional analysis, we do monitoring and evaluation, we also compare what the public is saying about certain institutions, we go and also analyze what is the contribution of this institution to the national development, and what is the effectiveness of this government agencies, and listen to both sides and see how we can contribute to the national development through analysis, through also understanding, because we don't just want to hear from one side. We don't want just to hear from one side, but we want to understand what institutions are, how the institutions are operating, what are the barriers to effectively implement their mandates, and also what are some of the needs these institutions have. And apart from giving you economic news, apart from updating you on statistics, this is also the time where we do institutional analysis. And a lot of people in the public have been talking about corruption in Namibia, corruption in Africa, and corruption at international level. And there are various institutions, various agencies, which are having capacity, and they are mandated to fight, prevent, and also make sure that they deal with issues of corruption, with law enforcement. You have banks, you have financial intelligence agency, and of course, you have Anti-Corruption Commission of Namibia. That is a commission which was mandated solely its responsibility to fight corruption in Namibia. And comparing it with other institutions in the region, particularly in SADC, look at institutions like State Capture Commission of in South Africa, you look at Public Protector, or you look at what is called Chapter 9 institutions, you put this institution of Namibia at a scale. Then you ask yourself, what are the challenges? What is the problem with ACC? Why public officials coming out and fighting ACC? Is there something wrong with Anti-Corruption Commission of Namibia? Or is there something that anti-corruption is not getting right? Or is there something that institutions, policymakers are not doing right to make sure that we are at the standard where we have to be, and our country is being removed from those unpleasant list. If you look at global analysis, when you look at global standing and also ranking, Namibia, like a few other countries, is gray listed by Financial Action Task Force because of its inability to deal with issues of money laundering, issues of corruption, and also issues of strengthening the financial system. Then, interestingly, apart from being relisted, this year, European Commission, EU, has also put Namibia under high-risk jurisdictions because of its inability to address recommendations of strengthening its financial institutions. What is very interesting is that last week, Bank of Namibia lost a case against frozen money international transaction. And this let you ask yourself difficult questions to say, for how long are we going to be in this gray list? Are these some of the things that are contributing to Namibia being ranked there? And also ask yourself this question, when a country is ranked as high-risk jurisdiction in terms of its inability to be at the standard of strengthening its financial system, it also means a lot about investors. It also means a lot about people who are interested in investing in your country. So with this, today we are going to look at that one institution which can also, in that line of assisting or doing its job, that is Anti-Corruption Commission. And we are going to engage the spokesperson of Anti-Corruption Commission, Ms. Josephine Hituamata, spokesperson of the commission. We are going to ask difficult questions. What is the problem? How are you doing? And all those questions that the public have been, wanting to know. Just before we go there, when you look at continental statistics in terms of corruption are indicating that according to Economic Community of West African State, it has stated that Africa annually is losing $88.6 billion through corruption, and this is representing 3.7% of continental gross domestic product. That is continental news, and it's also very interesting to look at these statistics and how are these institutions contributing to reduce this and also to the development, because when you're fighting corruption, you're also protecting national resources and you are contributing to equal distribution and also justice in the country. So we are going to engage the spokesperson of Anti-Corruption Commission and look at what she has to say.
Ms. Josephine, good morning and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Very good morning to you and to all the listeners of Eagle FM. I'm honored to be speaking to you this morning.
Yes, we are also very happy to have you in the this program. Yeah, maybe just before we go to the content, how are you doing and how is the anti-corruption as an institution doing so far?
Thank you very much. Basically, the commission is trying by all means to live up to its mandate, which is to fight corruption in Namibia through different means, through investigating corrupt practices and also through educating the public, continuously educating the public on the issues of corruption, as well as executing its mandate on the prevention of corruption. So the commission is currently, it's continually actually living up to that mandate.
The last time we spoke, it was during International Anti-Corruption Day when anti-corruption also expanded the office around Rundu. How is that office operating?
The Rundu office, looking at the few months that of its existence, would say that it was a very good decision to really open an office in that part of the country.
Yeah.
The fact that we are receiving quite a number of report in the three regions, which is Kavango East and Kavango West, as well as the Zambezi region. And that actually having an office at the center of those regions, the three regions, actually made things more easier than before when we used to have colleagues from Ochivarongo that used to attend to the three regions, in the sense that staff members can go in the field and spend days in terms of doing investigation. And also the complainant have an opportunity to meet with our staff members. We are closer to them and narrate their complaints and all that they know, all that they want to bring to the attention of the commission face-to-face. And that makes actually the whole trusting process easier, because when you're talking to someone on the phone, it's not like when you are reporting that face-to-face, because when you're reporting face-to-face, you can know who you're talking to, and in a way it also develop the trust in for you to trust this person that you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
And it also make it easier when they are back and forth in terms of collecting or gathering evidence in whatever that has been reported.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that I don't have the statistic now as to how many cases we so far received, but I'll tell you what, it's quite a number of complaints that we've received and quite a number of cases that we have been attending to that are emanating from the three regions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Ms. Josephine, before we go to the questions of budgeting and also the operation, maybe just to get your opinion as a spokesperson of the Anti-Corruption Commission, there have been some views in the public, and have you met individuals who do not really understand the role of anti-corruption, and also who maybe misunderstand the operation of anti-corruption? And maybe just to clarify those things, because we have different law enforcement institutions, but it could be that maybe you face that. That's why there's also always people who may come and complain, but it's not really was supposed to come to you. Just I want that clarity, particularly when it's coming to the mandate and also the role of Anti-Corruption Commission.
Of course, we do come across quite a number of people who really don't understand our mandate. That can judge it from the complaints that we receive on a daily basis.
Yeah.
There are many times that we refer the complainant to the appropriate bodies.
Yeah.
For example, you find someone want to report things relating to employment.
Yeah.
And we always have to refer them either to the Ministry of Justice and Labor Relations, or we refer them to the Office of the Ombudsman.
Mm.
And there are some times where you receive cases that speaks more to the NAMPO mandate and not specifically for the commission.
Mm-hmm.
We have quite a lot to do in terms of making people understand. Or you find, like lately in the social media, you find people complaining about the ACC not doing much, or maybe the ACC not... cases not being finalized on time, or taking long on finalizing cases. Not forgetting that, not keeping in mind that the commission has the mandate it says far is stretched to the investigation only.
Yeah.
The commission have no mandate on deciding on who to prosecute in terms of its own cases.
Yeah.
The commission does not have a mandate as to how fast should the case go on court,
yeah,
or how long should it take. It doesn't really have a mandate or an authority over the judge, the outcome of the court,
yeah,
pertaining,
yeah,
to its own cases.
Yeah.
Hence, to this, we over the years we've been really proposing and that we need a specialized court that specializes specifically on corruption cases, because there's actually a difference in terms of dealing with prosecuting a case of a murder and a case of a corruption activity,
yeah,
or corruption crime.
Yeah.
And that's what most of the people don't understand. And the same process, the same court role that accommodate other sort of crimes,
yeah,
is the same court that deals with corruption-related crime.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, the commission have no authority or have no power over what happens there or how long it takes.
Mm-hmm.
So we have as much the our powers end at investigating. Of course, we can send our cases to the prosecutor general for a decision to prosecute.
Mm-hmm.
And if the prosecutor general's table is also full and does not give us feedback,
yeah,
on the only thing we can do is to follow up, but we don't really have that power,
uh-huh,
to oblige the prosecutor general to speed up our cases.
Uh-huh.
Understand? And I'm sure many times you find us that a case that was submitted to the prosecutor general 4 years ago,
yeah,
the feedback is only given now to prosecute,
yeah,
those that have been accused of that particular case. So it's really not within us, and that's what people don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, they don't understand what is ACC supposed to do.
Yeah.
They don't understand how far should we go in terms of executing our mandate.
Yeah.
So and that's why many times you've just been saying, yeah, you've been investigating this case for so long, but,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, because, you know, what we see from the outside when you look at anti-corruption, we just say that it's something which was supposed to uproot corruption in Namibia, but that process maybe is not well clarified. But when you say that, it's exactly where I wanted to go, the relationship between anti-corruption and also other law enforcement agencies and also the judicial system, because I've seen and I've listened to your director general when he was explaining this, to say, yes, you investigate, then you recommend to the high authority, which in this case is prosecutor general, who has the power to say investigate or don't investigate. However, you don't really have power to say what, take this thing to court. Maybe first, one credit is, what is the relationship of ACC, other law enforcement agency, and also the judiciary itself?
At this point in time, I would say the relationship, though it's okay,
yeah,
the relationship is fine, mm, given that I can give an example of NAMPOL. We work really well together.
Yeah.
And to find some cases that NAMPOL maybe take on and later they realize they are more into corruption crime, they have to refer them to Anti-Corruption Commission.
Yeah.
And we also have police officers in our establishment that are actually being seconded to the commission to assist with the arrest.
Yeah.
And all that. And also the FIC, we also have good relations in terms of tackling financial crimes that links to corruption issues.
Yeah.
So, and in terms of judiciary, we are also fine, but the relationship can still go, can,
yeah,
just go as far as working together.
Yeah.
But there's not really that legal framework that really compel,
yeah,
maybe the judiciary to prioritize corruption crimes.
Yeah.
So, and that is what we are lacking in our legal framework. And as for the Anti-Corruption Act, also there's so much to be done. It needs to be reviewed to really extend our powers and authority,
mm-hmm,
and also in terms and also strengthen the relationship that we have to, mm-hmm, have. We're supposed to have with the relevant law enforcement, the relevant bodies or authorities. So. Our relationship is still as it is, but there's nothing really that compels the other to really prioritize,
yeah,
issues of corruption. So, yeah.
It's just a professional relationship.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yes. While we are there, I want to ask, I don't know how you're going to answer this, but do you think the inability of Prosecutor General to recommend corruption cases to be prosecuted fast make your institution look like you're not doing anything?
I would say that it's not that the inability, yeah. But the prosecutor general is able, only that the same prosecutor general that tackle or make a decision on corruption crimes or corruption-related cases,
yeah.
is the same who make a decision in other crimes in the country. We only have that one office that deals with every sort of crimes,
yeah.
or every sort of cases that have to go to the court.
Yeah.
And maybe what we can do, we have to strengthen or maybe enhance, how can I put it? Maybe we need to really... capacitate the strengthen the capacity of the officer, the prosecutor general, in terms of maybe having more staff members,
yeah.
That can help to really tackle issues in the country.
Yeah.
I'm sure that the prosecutor general is willing to prioritize our cases, but unfortunately, you find her table is full, and she have to decide, or he or she have to decide in all the cases that comes to her table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and do you think? Like you have communicated, like having corruption court or given or expanding the act of anti-corruption would allow your work to be easier, or also allow public also to move away from you, because we have seen even cabinet ministers are coming, but it was clarified. We have read your statement about the act. Do you think expanding that act could assist in finalizing of the cases?
Of course, that definitely it will, because expanding, reviewing the act will not only speak to one thing.
Yeah.
We also speak to the maybe the structure of the institution, because currently we are only living up to 120 staff members in the country, comparing to other countries with the same kind of population.
Yeah.
We also bring in the issue of a harmonization of laws with other institutions. I can give an example of the Auditor General, for example.
Yeah.
Auditor General, they have that mandate to audit the institution, and they have more access to information through their auditing that ACC times they don't have, because they are obliged to do the auditing on a yearly basis.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have laws harmonized that before you release your report, share with the Anti-Corruption Commission to ensure that they... out of what we have found, they can make a case out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think that reviewing the act will really help our institution to work to deliver more.
Mm-hmm.
And the other issue is that we need to remember that when you are operating within the law that establishes your institution, you cannot do anything out of it, because anything you do out of what has been legally given to you, it will be required as you might even contravene other laws that because you do something that is not within your parameters.
Mm-hmm.
Understand? So once it's reviewed, it will bring a lot of changes. It will bring a lot of strengthening on what we are doing, and it will also, if you can remember well, we had a case on which that actually led to corruption definition to be stripped out of the act. Understand such things, because you might be, all the cases you bring up might just be, you might just lose out on technicalities or given the definition that is being given on your law.
Mm-hmm.
But if we were maybe walking under the sun without any legal framework, you would tell me that we can do anything. But given that we have a law that is governing the institution, we have to work within that law. And that's why if it can be reviewed, and a lot of things that gaps that we have identified, looking at other institutions, looking at other countries, the ones that are really doing well in terms of fighting corruption, and see what is that we don't have in our law that we can bring in, it would definitely bring some changes and bring some improvement in terms of fighting corruption in Namibia.
Yes, Ms. Josephine, let us look at the current moment. Let us look at the current moment. Let us look at the current governance. Namibia, he says... first woman who is a president, and she set the presidency, making few structural changes. And also one of the things that she has mentioned is that corruption in Namibia will be treated as treason. And I want to look at, I don't want you to speak on behalf of the politicians, the commitment that they have, because there is a difference between what is being spoken and also what is unpractical. Now, we look at the national budget, and we are looking at... this year, there is an allocation of 116 million to the commission. How do you view that, and how is this budget going to be used, and what is your view on this? because what is your view on this allocation of 116 million?
All right. First of all, I would really want to appreciate the Namibian government and all those who played a part in terms of allocating funds to the commission.
Yeah.
And over the years, I would say that we can really see that there's an improvement in terms of the allocation.
Yeah.
Comparing to the years, the past years, I can maybe look at the 2020-2021 financial year where we were allocated, I think, 61.6 million.
Yeah.
And as years goes on, this year it's gone to 116 million. You can really tell that slowly we are actually getting there. We are understanding the mission and vision of the country in terms of fighting corruption, as well as the mandate of the commission that has been set up or established to fight corruption. However, I would not shy away. Cannot shy away that from the fact that this amount might look sufficient, but from a practical standpoint, I would say that it's not so enough.
Yeah,
more can still be done to increase the budget of the commission. Because this is actually when you weigh it against the scope of the investigation, the scope of the commission, the continuously increasing volume of the activities that we are doing on a daily basis, the responsibility of the commission ranging from investigating cases, public education activities, corruption prevention activities, and the complexity of most of the things that we deal with, especially in terms of investigation, I would say that this budget... it's not so sufficient.
From the public, we can say it's nothing. We can say it's nothing. Mm. We don't want to speak on your behalf, but maybe have you tried to, as an institution, not you, as an institution, have you tried also to speak to the authority about the work that you do, and also about the amount of money allocated to you, and was this done deliberate? Because when I have a budget with me, I'm trying to analyze the budget, but I think you are the least, you are among the least funded commission to say, is this deliberate, or you did not present enough work to them to show that you are able to deserve more than that?
Of course, that we did communicate, and I think that actually through our communication and engagement with our authorities, that's what actually led to the whole increment. Mm. As I've mentioned at the beginning, that if you compare to 2020-2021 financial year, the commission was allocated 61.6 million.
Yeah.
Comparing to now, that we actually went up to 116 million. So it's through the presentation of what we are doing, is through the presentation and communication as well as engagement with those those who are responsible for allocating funds, that's how now it came to be increased. Mm-hmm. So we have communicated, and as time goes, I think we continue to communicate and present to what is that we have to do, and we have also break it down as to how we spend the money that we get.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure that this is not it. I'm sure as we go on, the budget will increase. And if I can maybe just mention that if you look at this budget, 63% of it goes to remuneration. Yeah. That is mostly we are talking about the salary of the staff members and all that. Mm. And it's only 23%, which is for goods and services, that actually cater for things like the paying for the... tackling for the specialized investigators, maybe the auditing, the whatever, the forensic and all those things that we spend on that. So I would say that it's very expensive to fight corruption. It's not actually the way people look at it. Mm-hmm. If you are really fighting corruption and you really want the government or to recover what it has been stolen from them, or you want those who are responsible for this act to be held accountable, it's not an easy way to do. So if you look at this budget, it's not enough. I can say it's not enough. And if we look at Namibia being the part or signatory to UNCAC, as well as there were some recommendations that were made that a country should, for the commission to work properly, its budget should be actually be 1 or 2% of the GDP. But if you look at the current one that we're currently having, it's kind of 0.13%. of the gross domestic product of Namibia. So it's not enough, yeah. Looking at what we do.
I hear you. And looking at the high-profile cases and also looking at what you have said, that it's very expensive to fight corruption. And it's, I like to open up this discussion to say, even those who are listening, to say, if you are fighting a case which involves 200 million, which is not what you have, how easy is that? Now, that is a question of another day. But let us look at, before I go to the question regarding the cost of pursuing a high-profile case, maybe what is the most critical, if you have right to say so, the most difficult cases that ACC embarked into or ACC investigated, and the time, just one or two that you can recall, if you are free to speak about them.
I can give an example of the case that everybody is very much aware of, the case of the fish rot.
Yeah.
If you're looking at this case, it have touched base to international ground.
Yeah.
For you to investigate a case that goes beyond your borders.
Yeah.
There are certain things that you need to be accountable for, certain things that you need to comply with.
Yeah.
You cannot do it straightforward as ACC staff members. You have to have connection or communication or engagement with other authorities in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's a matter of forensic involved. If you remember, we had also a contractor, a company, I think it was Deloitte, if I'm not mistaken, to help us do the this forensic and auditing and all those things. And it involved also transactions beyond borders.
Mm-hmm.
And for you to get a bank statement from a bank in India, for example, it's not an easy thing.
Uh-huh.
And I think so far Namibia has spent close to 8 million or so, if I'm not mistaken, in just trying to get the evidence to support this particular case. So I would say that the most difficult point in investigating a case that goes beyond your borders, that's the most expensive part. Because you have to work with other institutions.
So you also need financial to travel. Institutions.
Yes, and you also need to travel.
Mm-hmm.
Because you cannot just call them to say, please, we are investigating this particular case, give us a statement of this account. No way, it doesn't work like that. You need to go to Vienna, you go to wherever that you, this case, they have actually a footprint, whatever, you have to go there. To have a meeting with those authorities and people in those areas for them to give you that permission.
Uh-huh.
So it's very costly. But if you are investigating a case that is only within Namibia, for example, a police officer has been bribed, that is a straightforward case. It doesn't require you to spend any cent.
Yeah, just go and pick them up.
Yes, you just go pick them up, get arrested, go to court every day, go verify the case if it's, be a witness and so on. But if it's a case that have to do with transaction, and we had other cases that we have, if you remember in 2019, we have reported that we are investigating a case that touched based on the confiscation of container of the medical, I think it was a consignment, medicine consignment that was brought in Namibia. That case is still on the table. And only later on when you dig deeper in a particular case, then you realize, this is not just the one person involved. There's quite a number of people. If you look at banks, you can see this person maybe had transaction wherever, then you have to follow the trail and you realize that it has not only been done in Namibia. This has touched other countries. So it's not easy. And we also have a case on Namco. We had a case on the old storage.
Yeah.
We had those are most of the big cases that I can mention.
Let's continue.
Yes, and I'm saying that, I was just saying, trying to emphasize that investigating such cases is not easy, and it's not only one person involved, as it was at the beginning when it was reported can be one person, but once you start investigating, you realize that it's a lot of people, and some of these people have accounts outside the country, some of these people have houses or properties outside the country, so you have now to determine how those things were procured, how were they acquired, And was the money that is being investigated linked to that? So you have to go. You are going in other people's jurisdiction. You have to spend a lot of money.
It's very critical. So is the institution also face a chance or maybe have an institution being sued in the process of doing its work?
As far as I can remember, can recall, that's why we are very cautious when we are doing our investigation.
Yeah.
And we always try by all means to do whatever that is under our mandate, mm-hmm. something that everything that has been covered by the legal framework that actually establishes the commission.
Yeah.
And should we not do that, we will definitely be sued. But as far as we are, ACCF, all these years, they've not been sued on anything because all that we do is what is actually prescribed by the law that actually governs the Anti-Corruption Commission.
So you play according to the rules?
We are playing according to the book.
Okay. You spoke about it's expensive to investigate a case, and a high-profile case. Can you have an estimate about one complicated case, how much can be spent in that? Because, you know, when we are asking these questions, we also want those who have power, because I know ACC does not sit in cabinet, and a lot of public is also speaking and asking questions to say, why are you saying corruption is treason, but you are giving this money? It's not even a quarter of what NAMRA can correct within a quarter of a year. So we are asking this question to say, because we want clarity, then we also assist each other. Either it's policymakers, it's those who have power also to change things, to say, what is the estimate of finalizing a case, high-profile case, and just that, maybe in terms of money?
Yeah, like I mentioned, I mentioned just now when I was explaining how...
Yeah.
How it is investigating a complex case and whatnot.
Mm.
I give an example of the fish rod case where I mentioned that so far government spent close to $8 million in just gathering evidence, making sure that all that is required is actually complied with. Mm. And that's mostly the most case that we have that with the money that has been spent on it that has been already put together. But for other cases, we're still ongoing.
Yeah.
Like the one I have mentioned earlier, it's still ongoing, and we cannot really say that what has been spent it will be has been spent. But just roughly to give an example, you can, for those complicated cases, complex cases, you can spend between $2 million to $10 million or more than that.
Yes, Ms. Josephine, just the last two questions. The other one is capacity of ACC. You know, the last time I spoke to the Director General, he indicated that you don't have enough employees. The workload is a lot, and you also lose most of your good investigators to other law enforcement. He mentioned FIC, I mentioned banks and other things, due to given better or bigger offers. In terms of capacity, where are you standing now? How many active investigators do you have, apart from those who assist you from law enforcement, and just employees in general, so that maybe the public can also know?
All right. Before I go to that, Davidson, can I maybe just clarify there when you're talking about how much we spend on a case? Like I said, you can spend from between $2 million to $10 million or more than that. And maybe I just have to clarify that this goes to overtime that investigators have to be paid, because sometimes they can walk throughout.
Mm.
This goes to the travel allowance that they have to go to other countries, like across borders travels, or they have to go to other towns and also have to do the forensic analysis, auditing, and data recovery. Because there are times that you are doing something, but the data is maybe deleted. You have to make sure that you employ expert to make sure that you recover the data that you are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And most of it. And also maybe to touch base on how long does it take for us to investigate a particular case. Over the months or over the years, I would say that a normal case or a straightforward case can take 3 to 6 months, but a complex case can take as much as 3 years to 5 years for you to finalize that case.
Depends on either the prosecutor will allow to.
Not even at the prosecutor general yet. We are just investigating. This one depends more. Yeah, not because the prosecutor, you only send the case that is fully investigated with the evidence, because the evidence that you have in the case or what you have obtained is what actually lead or guide the prosecutor general in terms of making a decision if this person can be prosecuted or not. That's why I'm saying, meaning that those 3 to 5 years, just a matter of investigating.
Yeah.
And that mostly depend, and the 3 to 5 years is only on the complex cases. And those cases are the case that goes beyond the borders. And that also depend on the level of cooperation from other institutions, like the financial institution, the law enforcement from other countries, where you have, and those that you have maybe agreement, you need agreement, or maybe you need to sort of have a permission through the court for you to go to that particular country. And also depending on the depth of the financial network, like I've mentioned, that you find a case that you're investigating, but the network in terms of transaction is too complicated, and you have to make sure that you map it out nicely so it can become clear to the prosecutor general as to what is that you are bringing to the court. And once you map it out, you now have to be able to defend that particular case in the court. So, and we have cases that sometimes you start as a corruption case, but you realize that there's an aspect of money laundering or there's an aspect of cross-border transactions. So those ones take 3 to 5 years, if I can roughly just bring it out.
Yes.
So that's why you find us times people say, yeah, this case has been on your table for so long. Yes, we are working. And believe me, you cannot just have an investigator focusing on one case for all those years. This person have other simple cases. This person have other straightforward cases, but they also have to deal with these complex cases.
Yes.
So,
let us look at the capacity that you have, experts that you have, numbers of employees that you have, and the last question, we're also going to look at what need to be done, because we want solutions and we want also either the government to get in, and also how we can also assist either through information dissemination and also through those who are making law. Let us look at the capacity and also...
Yes, the commission at present, we have a staff complement of 120 staff. However, it's only 88 of those that has been filled. And the rest is still in the process of being filled. And for investigation, only to be in particular, that one we only have 40 investigators in the whole Namibia. As we have this figure standing currently, it can be reduced, it can be increased as we go, because our staff members, it's true, like what Mr. Doa mentioned, to what you have referred to, that our staff members are going to better paying institutions, and like the Namra, with people going to the banks and all that. So, but currently we are sending at that amount, that number of our staff members. Unfortunately, we do have forensic department now that is actually also bringing down the cost, though not entirely, because before we used to hire forensic from scratch, but at least now we have those that are here, and we only outsource the services of forensic once our staff member are not able to do that. We also need, we don't have lawyers on our system, in our establishment yet, which is also very, very important to do, because they somehow have to assist in terms of compiling reports and submitting to the prosecutor general, and also guiding our staff members, especially the investigators who normally are expected to go to court and defend their cases and all the evidence that have been they've obtained or gathered through the investigation. In terms of training and capacity building, also we our budget goes there, because our staff members times go to South Africa, Botswana, just to learn. It's the investigation of corruption matters cannot be a once-off thing. It's a growing thing, because the moment, as much as technology is evolving, much as we now have these AI stories, we all have this technology upgrading everywhere, you need the staff members, especially those who do investigation, they need to be upgraded in terms of skills for you to be able to crack down all these transactions and all these kind of corrupt activities that's been perpetrated by those who have done IT or those who have done, who are well vested with the issues of technology. So that's where we stand, and that's where most of our budget also goes. Yeah. And yes, and that's the capacity of the staff members that we have.
Yes. Lastly, Ms. Ituamata, just if what the public expect need to be met and what government is saying need to be met, what are those five golden things that need to be given to ACC, need to be assisted so that we don't come and say what you want to say in the public, because we ought that to be your duty. What are those things that you need as an institution? I'm not saying from anywhere, but what are those things, that five things that you really need or need to be done to capacitate and also expand implementation of the mandate of ACC?
Thank you. Of course, the most critical part is the reforming of the legislative reforms.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned throughout our interview, that the Anti-Corruption Act is actually ought to be reviewed and help expand the powers of the commission.
Yeah.
And these powers that I'm almost talking about is the power to either powers to search, is currently working together with the police, seizing of the items, the arrest, and also access information, critical information that is so critical to our investigation. And to fully retain that autonomy of the institution, because currently our staff members are appointed as per the Public Service Act.
Mm-hmm.
Though the investigators are given powers twice, through the Public Service Act and also given the power to investigate through the Anti-Corruption Act. Mm-hmm. If they can only be appointed, we detach completely from the Public Service Act.
Mm-hmm.
Because this, why I'm saying that is because currently, as we are, we don't have the power or authority to remunerate our whistleblowers or to give a gift to our informers,
mm-hmm.
Not like the police, because the Police Act gives them that power to do that, mm-hmm. and unfortunately for us, that's why sometimes we fall short of getting evidence, because the people who really have access to evidence, they want to get paid. I can give an example. There was a time one of the complainants called in to say, please, I want to report this, but the people I want to report, they are here, and they want to offer me money. Are you guys willing to give me something, or I can just keep quiet and accept the bribe that I'm getting from those people.
Mm-hmm.
Understand? So we don't have that power. But once our act is reformed and reviewed,
yeah.
I think it will be good for us to include all those. And if we were not part of the Public Service Act, because it does not give that provision for the public institutions to pay those who are giving them information or those who are assisting them in executing their mandate,
mm-hmm.
we can have that access, we can have that authority to be able to remunerate our people. Or our informers, so to say, because a lot of people, it's really risky, honestly, risky to fight corruption, because once you're fighting corruption, you are taking somebody else's bread,
yeah.
or you are taking away somebody's scope of benefiting,
yeah.
and it's very risky, and our informers sometimes they also weigh the possibility of them being in danger.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are putting yourself in danger by reporting corrupt activities, but you're not getting anything, sometimes it's so discouraging.
Mm-hmm.
That's why if we had the power to offer something to them, they can be encouraged
you compare to other commission in other countries, they have that power.
Some of them do have that
okay.
power. They do have that within their act.
Mm-hmm. Lastly,
but unfortunately for the Namibia, we don't have.
Okay. Lastly, just an estimate amount of budget that can allow ACC to finish what is on your desk, what is on the investigator's desk, then we can prologue. Execute that mandate. What is an estimation budget of a well-functioning institution with capacity and also energy to do what is required by the Act?
Okay. Yeah, but before we touch on the what is estimation, maybe I can just mention, I know we are running out of time.
Yeah.
I can also mention that what can also assist us is to harmonize our laws in Namibia.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned earlier regarding the Auditor General, if they were obliged to share whatever they found with the ACC, it can also help. And also dealing with administrative issues, because many times things that we come across is just administrative error that has been committed in different institutions, which is actually the power that is vested in the supervisors or the head of administration in those particular institutions. But the commission deals with corruption crimes, not basically merely administrative errors. So if we can have all those things spelled out nicely in the act, you can also assist us move forward. And also we need a stronger collaboration with our institution in Namibia, and we hope that through the Parliamentary Oversight Committee and through the implementation of National Anti-Corruption Strategy, which is inclusive of different institutions, we will definitely get some way in terms of fighting corruption in Namibia. And coming back now to the estimation, I wouldn't really have exact figure at this point, but I would say that it's actually advised or recommended through the United Nations Convention Against Corruption,
yeah,
which is UNCTAD, as well as the Jacaranda recommendations. They actually specify that if for an institution as the Anti-Corruption Commission, for it to function effectively,
yeah,
for it to be able to carry out its mandate to full capacity, it should be actually be given, how can I put it, the budget, an appropriate budget for it should be at least 1 or 2% of the GDP. We can calculate that, but it should be at least 1 or 2% of the GDP. Like I mentioned earlier, that at current point in time,
yeah,
our budget is 0.13% of the GDP.
Uh-huh.
Not even close to 1 or 2 that has been recommended by UNCTAD and the Jacaranda recommendation.
Yes, Ms. Josephine and the ACC, thank you very much for your time, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. Yeah, that was Ms. Josephine Mituamata, spokesperson of Anti-Corruption Commission, and she was giving us her side of the story, or the side of ACC story, where they are standing, either in terms of capacity, in terms of the act, how they operate. Are they prosecuting institution, or they are just investigating? How long does it take to finalize high-profile case? And she also indicated the complexity of fighting corruption. She indicated the amount of money spent on fighting one case, so it crosses between 2 million to 10 million. And that is when you are dealing with high-profile case, which can also, you know, attached or cutting across different grounds. And this is a time now where you have to look at what is the government saying, what is their effort, and what is being presented, because there's a big difference between government indicating that corruption is going to be treated as high treason when you spend less than 1% of the budget, which is not recommended by international, you know, a convention on fighting corruption. And as we indicated earlier, when you look at how much is being taken from Africa by corruption, which is $88.6 billion every year, it's a very interesting thing to be. It's a very interesting time to be alive, and it's also a very interesting time also to analyze and compare. What are we saying? What is our challenge? How can we achieve our national developmental goal? Because there's a difference between what you say and what you do. Because we have seen it, and we have heard ourselves. And maybe it's now the time for us to see what can be done, particularly in terms of investing in key institutions, and also investing in something which is contributing to the national developmental goal. It's the same thing. We want to be industrialized. Then you look at the amount of money which is being spent in research and development. then you understand that there is a lot of things that we need to do, or there's something that we are not doing right. There's a difference between that to say. Because looking at where we are standing now as a country, we have a lot of challenges. And it's going to be interesting, because like from today on, analysts are already trying to analyze the first 100 days of our president. What have we done so far? What have been done in various sectors in terms of governance, in terms of structure, in terms of administration, as it set the tone for what is going to happen in the next 5 years. And yeah, when you want to also look at the role of ACC, look at what was said, particularly when you train your best investigators or you train your best analysts, then they are offered high salaries by other institutions, then you have to restart again. Look at the operational mechanisms. Look at offices, how many offices. And yeah, I think it's a time to look at that, and also a time to come up with better views. Let us look at the Act. What is Anti-Corruption Commission Act saying? What power do they have? Some people call it the toothless bulldog, which is their right, which is based on what they are saying and what they are seeing. And maybe it's a time to go deep into the matter and also try to see what is really going on. Because if you want to see how institutions are operating, it's very interesting. It was a very interesting time, particularly between 2010 and 2012, when Professor Lumumba was the director of Anti-Corruption Commission of Kenya. It was a very interesting time. He was an honest man who was ready to clean the room. Then it only took him, in 1 year, he was forced to vacate that position. It's a very interesting time. Go and read history. Go and also look at those news. Then you also be able to understand. People like the current president of Kenya, Ruto, they were forced to resign when they were president. It was a very tough moment in Kenyan politics. But they decided to say, no, this guy, we appointed him, now he's coming for us. So, yeah, today we are looking at the Anti-Corruption Commission. And it's also very interesting also to look at cooperation with other institutions. Are we going to have effective governance without coordination? Because for you to have an effective anti-corruption commission, you need the prosecutor general to make sure that she prioritizes those cases. Because other than that, they can't decide. And for you to have an effective ACC, you must invest. You must invest. Because I think it's also the right time to look at how we prioritize what is needed. Because you can't have a problem of the roof or roofing, then you buy a paint to paint the wall. Then it's not making sense. It's not making sense at all. It's also the time also to look at other institutions also, like Financial Intelligence Center, Bank of Namibia, law enforcement, in general, looking at Namibian police, looking at NAMRA. Ask yourself how much tax is collected by NAMRA or NAMRA pay just within the quarter of a year. And look at how much an institution like ACC is getting from the portion of the country. Was this done deliberately? Or there's something which needs to be done so that we can have difference in terms of our operational mechanisms, and also holding upgrading the state. Because if you look at rankings in terms of how we do things, we are not on the good side. I've already indicated that Namibia is gray listed by Financial Action Task Force, and you know what that means. It means that investors, when they are coming into your country, they have to think twice. They have to invest not. They don't have to invest all the amount because they are gambling, because your system is weak. If you have a cabinet minister who can lose money just through a call, then you understand that something really need to be done. Something really need to be done. And just interestingly, this year, the European Union Commission said, no, Namibia, we are putting you at a high-risk jurisdiction. You are not sorting your things out. And a lot of us, Namibians, different opinions were written. We are very angry to say why international institutions are putting at this. Then you have to understand that there is something that we are not doing right. So interestingly, last week, the bank lost the case of international, you know, transaction. 40 million, one of generals from DRC, he won the case. What is the issue? And how can we move forward? So when you're waking up this morning, it's also time to think about that. It's also time to look at how we can assist or how we can contribute to the advancement of the country by strengthening institutions. Because institutions have to be well coordinated. Institutions have to answer also to the need of the people and also protect the resources of the country. So let's go to a commercial break. Then we are here until the hour of 7:30. We have around 22 minutes. However, you can still engage us in the studio at 083-288-401, 083-288-401. Then you can air your view, you can air your opinion, you can give your questions, contribution, constructive criticism, and stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news! IMBA just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe odite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado ili nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special angetashake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko berewa bura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye. Get social with us on Twitter.
Yes, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. We are continuing with Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And from Anti-Corruption Commission, as we are listening from the spokesperson, it's also now time to speak about food security. It's time to speak about food security. It's time to speak about bread and butter issue, as we are always indicating. Yeah, it was stated that although the economy of Namibia continue to grow, although the economy of Namibia continue to grow, in terms of GDP, although we continue to be upper middle income country compared to other countries in the world, poverty, unemployment, and food insecurity continue to be major challenges in Namibia. And food security remain a serious challenge in Namibia, affecting the significant portion of Namibia. So analysis are indicating that 1.15 million people, accounting for 38% of the population, is facing high level of, you know, acute food insecurity, which need urgent attention. So every year, this segment of the population continue to suffer with imbalance or unable to have basic food or basic staple food. So when you look at what have happened last year, and I like quoting this, when the former Minister of Environment visited or went to COP, Conference of Party, that climate summit, he indicated that Namibia is faced with drought that never existed in 60 years. And you understand from there what have happened. You've seen Namibia getting food from countries such as China. We are at the edge of being assisted. So while we are there, it's also very important to look at my colleague, Lois Ashimi, who went into the conversation with Moses Franz, just to unpack this, particularly when it's coming to food insecurity in the country, and also how we can come up with better mechanisms or better ways on coming up with sustainable food production mechanisms as agriculture become one of the main priorities of this new administration.
On to our next item, we want to again speak on the food insecurity in the country. I mean, I understand that even Tuesday we spoke about the food insecurity in the country. I mean, we still did not solve the problem of food insecurity in the country. We still lack food in the country. That's why we now have to keep the conversation going, looking toward the analysts, the farmers, the producers, to help us understand, to give us also the input on how do we better then, or how do we then produce enough food for our country. And of course, the recent analysis shows that 1.15 million people, accounting for 38% of the population, are now facing high level of acute food insecurity. And of course, now every year a segment of our population grapples with food scarcity, either due to insufficient production or whether inability to afford the food, right? So now with this, we are now joined by a farmer, a livestock farmer, Moses Afrant, just to help us also explain what is maybe food insecurity in his term. A very good morning to you, Tata Moses, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Oh, good morning, Lisa. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay.
Yeah, just to start off, we want to understand just the term itself, in your own opinion, what do you think is a food security?
All right. Thank you for a good question.
Mm-hmm.
So, when people we talk of food security, here we go, we mean that all the people at all times, then they should have access to sufficient safe food, which is naturally exposed, of course you understand that it should meet the dietary need for healthy life. Of course, we understand that if we are eating healthy food, then it could prevent malnutrition, and one should have energy just to do some activities. And of course, when you're eating healthy food, then you are even healthy. You are not even sick.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, looking at this, trying to find ways to improve us having enough food in the country, can food security be achieved in the country?
Yes, of course. Food security can be achieved,
mm-hmm.
Especially in Namibia.
Okay.
But of course, it requires some addressing several interconnected challenges, and these are the challenges that we need to look at, or we need to solve. Like for Namibia, has the potential to produce enough food. If you see the portion of the population that lacks access to affordable, nutritious food. But of course, there are some challenges due to factors like poverty. You know, some people are poverty, even unemployment, and sometimes inequalities in access to resources.
Mm.
If we had to look at it in more details, we may start with the availability. Right, Namibia sometimes is a dry country, you know, and of course we understand that agriculture is the heavily reliant on rainfall, meaning to say our rainfall is unpredictable. And sometimes as Namibians, we lack the technical skills and support. We talk of even the accessibility. You know, people in rural areas lack financial means to just to purchase even the materials. You see, if we talk of the inequality, so there's disparities in access to resources such as land or capital, and of course, which exacerbate the food insecurity. But of course, now we have to find out the potential solution to such those challenges. We may talk of like maybe we need to invest in sustainable agriculture practices.
According to your research, what crops can now be cultivated to address the food insecurity in the country? Now, can it maybe be rice? Can it be potato? What crop do you think that maybe can also solve the lack of enough food in the country?
Right. Thank you for the good question. Of course, we need to address food insecurity in Namibia, but there are some variety of crops that one can cultivate.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you mentioned rice is one of the crops. Yeah? We can talk of maize, sorghum, millet, but the problem we have in Namibia, it's water. But those crops that I mentioned,
mm-hmm.
I understand, but because they have a short period, like they grow for a certain period, they don't take much for long.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, just also to expand it, I mean, you are a livestock farmer, right? And
yes.
Mostly we export livestock live to other countries, right? So now, mm-hmm. In your view, what is your take into rather exporting livestock live without adding any value? What do you say about that?
Yeah, I understand that sometimes if we export live animals, then we cut off some of our money. You see, if we add value to our product, then we create more job opportunities, you see?
Mm-hmm.
Because, let me say, some things that were supposed to be added value, you might have some people that they will do that one. But now, if we export live animals like that and send to the other countries, then the country that will save, they will be able to do that task and they will stand back again here in Namibia. That's why we may end up buying our own products. Mm,
in this case, our own beef.
Yes, even our own beef. And yeah. Even the skin will be added or will be, something will be done just to be to do it, like to add more value on the product.
Mm, as a finished product. All right.
Yeah, it's a finished product.
Mm-hmm. Now, just also to add more or to elaborate more, what else maybe do you think that can also add an impact? Should poultry maybe, and of course other techniques of farming practices be prioritized in order to combat or solve the food insecurity in the country?
Yes, that it can be one. Because if you check the meat that we get from chickens, it contains protein.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are farming with live chickens or the slaughter, they get their income from there. And income is one of the things that we focus or we want people to create their own job opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you check, because we are even saying we must add value to our products, people are farming with chickens. They may even sell the fertilizer or the manure to farmers who are farming with crops.
Mm. What role can also the youth play in promoting food security?
All right. Of course, the youth, they can do a lot. The youth can do a lot, meaning to say, the youth, they should join ventures. They can come up with cooperatives. They can go for trainings or mentorships when it comes to agriculture, because the problem we have here, we lack skills, technical skills. But of course, if we happen to get enough knowledge or experience, then we can do a lot. They can select crops or livestock that adapt to local condition.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, they can't do that one if they lack capital, meaning they can go obtain grants on banks, such as they need even to do a lot of research on what's in demand, because sometimes the problems that we have here, especially people who are able to do them, they don't even do or practice face planting. But sometimes if they do face planting, then they only produce what is enough for the customers, just to prevent the food to go for spoilage. For instance, tomatoes. You see tomatoes, if you produce a lot, then who are your customers? Maybe they can only able to buy a little, then the rest will go for a waste.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also need to visit different offices, such as the Ministry of Agriculture. They can get a subsidy somewhere there.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you listen to on radio, you see every morning the councillors, they announce there are some grants like microfinance,
mm-hmm.
that they support the youth.
Mm-hmm.
And then also I think Namibia also need to promote agriculture to be profession, because people, they understand, no, agriculture may be just for poor people. We educate people to understand, then everyone may be able to join. And then I think the government also, they should allocate land just to reduce the inequality. You see, we have the inequality when it comes to land, land allocation.
Yeah, just last yesterday, the city of Windhoek, or that's now the mayor, and the Shefela Lolanja announced a campaign aimed at ensuring food security, right? So whereby that, in her speech, she mentioned that the need now to focus on the community gardens or backyard horticultural activities that, that need to be happening in the city. So they are aiming that to make at least maybe 200 or 300 backyard gardens in the next period after now July. Now, what is your take into creating backyard gardens? It is not just in the city, but of course, how about we introduce this in all our towns or in all our regions? What do you say about creating a small garden or backyard gardens?
No, that's very, very significant.
All right.
If we create a backyard garden, then we are likely, or each and every house is likely to have a backyard garden. They'll be able to produce enough for the surplus. They will eat healthy food, and of course they will be able to sell and get the little that they can get to support themselves. And if you check, or if you see people who are doing agriculture, they are always focusing, pay attention to their gardens. They are likely to be kind of busy, and they are not even going to complain that we have high unemployment rate, because that is already self-employment. They will be able to sell their own products, you know, to get money, and it even reduces a number of people who is staying in the street, who are not doing anything, who are going to steal or vandalize other properties. It's very, very important, as long as it is, it should be a kind of campaign, especially in rural areas, just to go and educate people. Because what we need to do, or what we need to, just to change our mindset.
Yes, you got it from Moses Front, that for us to fight food insecurity, for us to make sure that Namibia produce or become sustainable food producer, we need to make sure that we prioritize farming, as farming also keep you busy and reduce unemployment. But the question that you need to ask yourself is that for how long we have been at this discussion, for how long the country has been at this discussion, how long the question of land allocation is not yet addressed, and what is the contribution of our commercial farmers to the local market, and also what is the ability of an individual, a young person? What is the ability of a young person? What are institutions which are there, which are assisting young people without collaterals to start their farming initiatives? Yes, we understand backyard gardening is one of the mechanisms to produce your own food. But is that enough? Is that enough in terms of long term? And how are we going to do this moving forward? I think it's also the right time also to look at the green schemes in Namibia. Can we do a critical assessment on the green schemes in Namibia? What are they producing? What capacity do they need? How many young agricultural graduates are working there? And what is the process of land allocation? And how long is it going to take us? Or are we continue to be like this? And who is benefiting from Namibia being food insecure? Are those donors happy when they are giving us food and they are not giving us technical know-how on how to stand on our own? What is the disadvantage of Namibia? Who is going to suffer if Namibia become food sustainable? Those are the questions that we must ask ourselves. However, due to time, thank you very much for listening to Early Morning Scoop. And with me, David Shombe, Until next time.